Paul, I'm glad to see that you got a sense of humor about that.
Of course. It's in the intro of my book. It's in the intro chapter.
Well, I have to be honest. I have not read the book because I just got the PDF. Mm-hmm. So I skimmed. But the Simpsons are in the introduction of the book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in my opinion, the Simpsons are the best cultural arbiter there is. There's a Simpsons reference for everything. And that episode from 1997 to an episode they had later in 2014 in the World Cup shows you how much the game progressed, because in that episode, it's just an A block thing to set up the actual storyline, right, which is about a completely different topic, versus 17 years later, now they had a soccer episode. So
yeah, I'm glad that you were aware of it. I just was looking around for something to use as a transition, and I'm glad it was a home run, so to speak, although that's not a soccer term. Paul M. Banks is the owner and manager of thesportsbank.net, a Chicago-based news publishing platform specializing in sports, social, political, and cultural content. He has a new book, Transatlantic Passage, How the English Premier League Redefined Soccer in America, just released on Eckhart's Press. Our good friend, Rick Kempfer, who has published everybody's book.
Yeah, and you know, he's a fan of the rival team that I'm a fan of, so.
Oh, listen, I've known Rick, I don't know, 25 years. He is soccer crazy. He got it from his dad. There's the Greens or something, the team that he's, he has out in the burbs in Mount Prospect or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's in his blood. He grew up with it. And in his day, it was very limited in what you could watch and what you could consume, and it was very much kind of limited to certain like ethnic groups, versus today it's so mainstream. And Rick is a guy who's really, he knows, he's, you know, he's seen the roots, he knows it all.
When did you get the soccer bug, so to speak?
Actually, about a decade ago this time of year. So it was almost, it was in July, Manchester United came to Chicago to play the Fire at Soldier Field, and I went to this press conference, and I'm like, Sir Alex Ferguson, like, I'm throwing questions at somebody who's knighted. Are you serious? And then I see the whole paparazzi, the whole entourage, and all that stuff, and then a couple British news aggregator sites pick it up, and I see how it starts to explode in traffic, and then, of course, the fact that they were here, that's a huge thing, because these European teams, they know America's, you know, the biggest consumer market. It's a cash cow, and they're playing these meaningless friendly games, but they're drawing. I mean, most people don't know this, but the two most highest attended matches on American soil in the sport were preseason exhibitions, and they both happened within the last 7 years. And then there was another one in the top five that happened a couple of years ago up in Michigan at Ann Arbor. I mean, you get 115,000 to come out for it.
Let's talk about the book, and I'll throw, how about this?
Okay.
I'll throw out some stuff I highlighted and you respond.
All right, let's do it.
David Beckham, first globally branded superstar, Tide Turner in America.
All right. I had a great conversation with the man who worked on the deal to get him here, to L.A., actually, to get David Beckham to play in the United States.
L.A. Galaxy? Was that the name of the team? No.
Yes. It is the L.A. Galaxy. All right.
Hey, hold it. I got one right. Okay, sorry.
John Landecker, soccer expert. There you go.
That's me. Watch this header.
So Sean Hunter, who owns the Chicago Dogs out in Rosemont, he was working in MLS at the time, and when I spoke to him about closing the deal, he brought up a great point in that Americans were ready to embrace top-notch soccer, and that's always been the thing. Well, how come Americans don't embrace it? Well, they will if it's the best of the best, and you know, David Beckham is the first real brand name that is just... He was actually supposed to be in a Simpsons episode, too, but he backed out.
And also, he's quite attractive.
Yes.
So, I mean, he's a matinee idol soccer player.
Oh, that's a huge part of it. I mean, married to a Spice Girl.
Exactly.
Great, good, but, you know, he doesn't... One of the people that I interviewed for this book, this journalist in L.A., Debbie, who's from the Manchester region, she said, he talks like a hamster. He's got a squeaky voice. He's this big, manly, you know, studly guy, but he's got this squeaky voice.
How much did they pay him?
He was the first designated player in MLS history, and I believe it was about $6 million.
Yeah, there's big money.
Yeah, the real money's in the shirts, though. The shirt sales, like when you, or I'm sorry, well, the kit, because we have to use.
Of course, and the pitch, which is right, which
dress.
Is instead of a field. So the, are we talking team jerseys here?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we saw it here with Bastian Schweinsteiger on the Fire. Is that
right?
You get a name, he sells shirts, he gets people to the park, and that's why MLS is kind of a retirement league. And maybe they don't really like that term, but it kind of helps everybody in that they get awareness. And if you're David Beckham or you're Schweinsteiger, or these guys in their 30s, you get a really nice paycheck.
So when you say it's a retirement league, the you're talking about European stars who come over and pick up a little extra, well, a lot of extra money to continue their career.
Right, yeah. I mean, these guys only form, they form a very tiny sliver of percentage of the players.
Yeah.
But because they're such big names, that's what we all focus on.
Right. And, you know, the, well, I don't want to veer off topic here. So let's take a break. And we'll return with Paul Banks. We're having a great conversation. The book is Transatlantic Passage, How the English Premier League Redefined Soccer in America. More coming up on 720 WGN. John Landecker, having a great conversation with Paul M. Banks. He's got a book. I'm going to read the title again, which is, where did I put it? I had it right here. Transatlantic Passage, How the English Premier League Redefined Soccer in America. So once again, I'm going to read something that I highlighted from the book, from the table of contents. And you obviously have got it together to make a response. So here we go. And if I mispronounce anything, let me know.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Jurgen Klopp?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Jurgen Klopp.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jurgen Klopp, a very funny, angry German. And that's the best kind of German there is.
I got to credit John Oliver, as I do, as I credit him for coming up with that description. But... it was so perfect, my Jurgen Klopp experience, because he, I got the first question in the presser, and he was kind of a smart aleck with me, which is what I wanted.
Right.
Because there, it was a very, a fake controversy, it was a contrived controversy in which they came to Notre Dame to play Borussia Dortmund in a friendly, and during the run-up to it, he was quoted as like, well, you know, you've seen the facilities at Notre Dame, but you haven't seen, what do you think of the stadium? And he wouldn't give the ringing endorsement. Like, he wouldn't say, because he hadn't seen it yet. And that was really all there was to it. But anytime you get the Lakers, Notre Dame, or in this case, you know, like Liverpool, United, the Yankees, people will come up with stuff just to create a firestorm. So I just simply said, what did you think of it now that you've seen it? And he just kind of said, does this place need commercial? Does it need endorsements? Like, why do you ask that? And I don't know, this is the best German accent I could do, but stay tuned for the British exits later. And then he asked me something about the pitch itself, and he's like, what did you think of the field conditions? I'm like, I'm way up in the press box, man.
I don't know. Yeah.
And it was just one of those things he does so he could talk himself. But he's such an interesting guy in that he is known for swearing quite a bit at when he gets very emotional. And he's also a very friendly guy that would go and sing a song in a pub. So he's a perfect mix of business and fun. And when that press conference ended, this was the one of the nuttiest things I've ever seen. There was a gentleman in the back with a different radio outlet, and he was dressed in all Liverpool gear, and he looked like him. And he asked him the last question. It was like a legit question. And then he goes, I've got another question for you, Jurgen. Can I get a hug? So he comes out and he hugs him. And then he lifts and he points to me. He's like, yeah, that's my effing doppelganger over there. Because he did. He had like
the whole outfit.
Yeah. He had the little round glasses and the beard. And plus, Jurgen looks like a Portland or Brooklyn hipster who are, people who are into soccer way ahead of the rest of us.
So the idea of English Premier League redefining soccer in America, you're talking about exactly how they did it to a certain extent. I mean, they targeted the American market. And had these games, matches rather,
right,
at these very well-known sporting facilities. And obviously it was to promote the sport.
Yeah, I mean, that summer they had a match at Notre Dame, exactly, at Yankee, yeah, Stadium and Fenway Park, and actually the Red Sox and Liverpool have the same ownership group, so it's pretty easy. But
really,
yeah, in fact, LeBron, what, even has a percentage ownership of Liverpool too.
I didn't know that.
And Arsenal, one of the biggest clubs, yeah, in London, save the cranky sports entertainment, the Rams, the Colorado Avalanche, the Colorado Rapids.
Unbelievable.
It's a whole, yeah.
Well, there goes that. That's all I got to say. Well, all right then. Okay, thanks very much for coming in. So these are all multinational corporations owning multiple sports franchises.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's like a billionaire's club, and these clubs are like their plaything. And Transatlantic Passage it's a sports book, but it's really a sports business book, because to me, that is what's really interesting. That, like, the world's 113th richest man, Roman Abramovich, is this guy who's considered Vladimir Putin's favorite son. He's this Russian oligarch, and he owns Chelsea in London.
Ooh.
You've got Manchester City is owned by a holding company that is actually the nation of the United Arab Emirates and the Abu Dhabi royalty. So then when they played Paris Saint-Germain, that is a team that is owned by a holding company that is owned by the nation of Qatar. So an English team playing a French team, and they're both owned by Middle Eastern countries.
A country owns the team.
Yes, those are the only two that are owned by a country.
How does that work? I mean, are citizens grabbed off the street and told, you're going to play soccer because they're the government?
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't want to play against them. And let's say you injure the top player, I think the government's going to come after you.
That is crazy. Can you imagine the United States of America owning any kind of team? No, I can't. I mean, that's totally random.
I mean, yeah, that's what's it's the behind the scenes of this book.
Oh, this really is great stuff.
The behind the scenes that people don't even realize.
You gotta get this book,
nuts,
everybody. You gotta get this book. This is full of great stuff. The book is called Transatlantic Passage: How the English Premier League Redefined Soccer in America. We got some time left. Here comes another question.
Okay.
Boy, you know how to answer them. Manchester United, still the biggest brand in the world, but not the biggest club.
Yeah. They, the problem that they have is they still crank out a lot in endorsements and promotions, mm-hmm, and shirt sales, but you know, they finished second this year, which is since the man I mentioned before, Sir Alex Ferguson, he retired in 2013. This is the highest they've finished since then. They're not winning major trophies, but anytime they do anything, it is just massive. And just, you know, like when you're talking earlier about weird jobs and things that happen,
yeah,
I went to one Manchester United home game at the end of the 2015-16 season, and that also just happened to be the only match in English soccer history ever canceled due to a bomb scare.
Whoa. I'd believe it. I would, you know, what my limited knowledge of that sport and the way fans can, yeah, sort of overreact to just about anything, I'd get the heck out of there in a hurry.
So
I'd believe it.
So because it's United, it's leading all over the world. It's headline news because it's Manchester United where, right, this is happening. And everybody, you know, I've got all these friends in media. They know I'm there. Everybody's trying to tweet or catch up with people, say, are you all right? Are you okay? And that's just causing things to crash more. And it just got weirder. And then as the day went on, By the time I got, my hotel was across the street, so I was really worried about that.
I would say so.
Because I was like, where am I going to go? This isn't the best place to be. And it was all because of a training exercise. They outsourced some private security from during the week, ran a training exercise, and they left a non-viable device, a facsimile. It looked like a cell phone pipe bomb in a toilet. Someone saw it, and that caused... I mean, yeah, and you know, it was all done. It was very like, oh, please disperse. You know, it was a nice, soft tone. Like, oh, please evacuate. It was great.
Let's bring it stateside. NBC Sports completely changed the game in 2013. Got greedy in 2020. Cut NBC and NBC Sports Network in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other side of the equation to me is once you could watch the games here every morning, really, NBC is the biggest game changer. They brought it over in 2013, and it fits nicely into your day because of the way the time changed.
Yeah.
You catch a game at 8, 10.
Right.
It's not like our football in which it might go 3.5, 4 hours. It's done in 2 hours. It's quick. And that went with the tours as another big reason why people were able to adopt it, because then they could see it. Plus, you had no language barrier, which gave the Premier League that huge advantage over the German Bundesliga. And I spoke with the man who did the deal. He gave me a lot of time for the book, which was really, really generous of him. His name is John Miller, and he's the inventor of the Winter Classic. Like, he came up with that, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a great event. This sounds like a book for people who don't even know anything about soccer because of these stories you're relating. I mean, they're fascinating.
Truly. It's focus grouped well with my mom, who doesn't know anything about soccer.
That's my favorite focus group.
Like, she said she really liked the travel stuff, and a lot of my sports guys who don't like soccer, they like the geopolitics and the big business stuff. I mean,
and who owns what? I'm totally fascinated. So I'm glad I got a copy of the book. Now I'll get to be able to read it. Once again, I can't believe these stories. They're just blowing my mind. Who knew? Transatlantic Passage, How the English Premier League Redefined Soccer in America, from Paul M. Banks. It is available from EckhartsPress.com. That is EckhartsPress Press.com. Wow. Man, thanks for coming in.
Oh, I'm so honored to be your first guest in studio. And it's great to have a place to go.
You got to come back again sometime.
Oh, absolutely, man. I'm in the neighborhood.
Are you? Really?
Yeah, I could walk here in 20 minutes.
You got it. Thanks for being with us.